Welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast, the photo imaging industry's leading news source. Here's your host, Gary Peugeot.
The Dead Pixel Society podcast is brought to you by MediaClip, Photo Finale, Advertech Inc., Got Photo, and the IPI Member Network. Hello again and welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. I'm your host, Gary Peugeot, and today we're joined by Andrew Cousin, the CEO of Circle Graphics, just outside Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Andrew. How are you today?
I'm great, Gary. Thanks for having me on.
So Circle Graphics is clearly one of the biggest names in the industry, but for the five people who aren't aware of who Circle Graphics is, could you kind of share some of the background of the company? Because you've been around a long time, but in the consumer printing space, a relatively short time.
Sure. Circle Graphics has been around since 2000, so right around 20 years. And the origins of the company were in grand format printing and specifically billboards. Mm-hmm. The founder of Circle Graphics back in 2000, I think, saw an opportunity to leverage some of the then emerging digital printing technologies to do things a little differently. Mm-hmm. And focused on the billboard market, which was mm-hmm. an interesting choice, a fairly mature business. Fragmented number of players, but certainly not a business that was, or a market that was growing dramatic. Right. But entered the market pretty aggressively at about 50% of market pricing, which of course grabs people's attention, including competitors who I think at the time told their customers, maybe even tried to tell themselves, you can't make money selling billboards at those prices and the quality must be terrible and that Circle Graphics is going to go out of business. About 10 years later and still today, Circle Graphics prints approximately 70% of all the billboards in the U.S. So a remarkable story mm-hmm. with a fairly simple product in a pretty mature market to be able to gain that kind of market share in a relatively short period of time.
So for those who don't know much about the billboard market, could you kind of give us an estimate, like you mentioned before the podcast, you know, the number of square feet you print a year? I just think that number would wow some folks.
Yeah, it's approximately 300 million square feet of printing a year. That's a lot of grand format, so 5 meter, 16 foot printers, mm-hmm. and a lot of ink, which you may wonder how any company in any market can get to that kind of a market share. And I think the simple answer is through innovation and improvement. And as it relates to ink, as just one example, we have PhD ink chemists on staff and formulate our own inks, which again, with 300 million square feet, that's a lot of ink in a year. So I think we are now fortunately at a scale, whether it's the cost of substrates, or ink, or the ability to run our operations 24/7. I believe we have a cost base in that market now that is virtually impossible for anyone to duplicate without the scale.
So that's one thing that you have an advantage in that marketplace. You have, you know, custom inks, you have some custom printing equipment, and you have your own R&D. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, has that been from day one sort of the market position, or is that something that's kind of been acquired over time?
I think overall, including our entree, I guess, 8 years ago into the personalized wall decor market, I think we look for products and processes where we can differentiate. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to deliver high quality products at exceptional speed and at really compelling price points. And of course, you're not able to hit a really compelling price point without a significantly attractive cost basis for the product. So as I think about generically what Circle's core competencies are, certainly printing is part of the puzzle, and I think we are as good as any in terms of being able to print a product cost effectively and high quality and quickly. But I do think one of the core capabilities is the ability to handle via digital workflows an extraordinary transaction volume on any given day. And we're just rolling into the busy season for the Waldecor market with a lot of products being gifted over the holidays. Just as an order of magnitude, we are about to be producing approximately 70,000 units a day through our operations. And that's certainly a big number, but when you think about it, that is not Amazon receiving 70,000 orders and pulling 70,000 items off the shelves, putting them in boxes and shipping them. That's an order that comes in, and with it comes a decent sized image file. That requires significant bandwidth to be both accessing and pushing those large files around the systems. And it's a totally automated paperless workflow. We can't be printing 70,000 or job packets a day to be going through the facilities. So I would say, coming back to my point, being able to handle in a highly automated fashion a huge transaction volume on a daily basis in very low quantities, for Waldecor, typically a quantity of one. And even on the billboard side of the business, you know, 50 billboards would be a large order, 50 of the same image.
Right.
So I think it's about good manufacturing disciplines. We're firm disciples of the lean manufacturing philosophy. And that allows us to hit high velocity of a large number of transactions for a large number of customers on it any given day.
So how many facilities do you have that are doing the Waldecor segment? I mean, you're doing them all in one location, or do you have multiple locations?
We have six locations doing Waldecor, and primarily two focused on the billboard market.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So take me back in time. It's 2010, 2011. When you're looking for new markets and you come across the Waldecor segment, what was the thought process there for getting into the, you know, that segment of the business? Because as I recall at that time, it was getting pretty heated up. You know, there were a lot of players in that market.
Yes. I'm not a very obvious choice to go from billboards to
not at all
to a canvas gallery wrap. But as I say, the soul searching, I think, focused on core competencies of the company, identifying a product that, in our view, was overpriced in the marketplace, and we felt the product could be redesigned to lend itself to high-volume production, automation, and so on. So back in 2010, 2011, that's what the company did, was redesign the product. Canvas gallery wrap, stretch canvas, has been produced the same way for hundreds of years, even since an artist would stretch a canvas around a wooden to paint an original painting. We did redesign the product, a very different method of construction. Today, we hold seven patents on that design. And as I mentioned before, it allows us to produce an exceptionally high-quality product at a compelling cost basis. Mm-hmm. It allowed Circle, similar to its entry into the billboard market back in 2000, it allowed Circle to play aggressively in the marketplace with at very compelling price points. So I guess when you think about that, quite a similar strategy to getting into billboards kind of 10, 11 years earlier, was successful helping get us a toehold in the business, and over the last 8 years or so, grow the volume dramatically to the point that Encircle was a substantially sized business just when it was a billboard company. And the company today is about five times the size 10 years later.
And, you know, let's not overlook the fact that, you know, having seen your products, you know, these are very, you know, high quality product. I mean, you've got, you know, backings on them. You've got, you know, pretty nice hardware. You've got framing options. So there's, you know, even though it's competitively priced, there's not a lot of skimping on the quality.
No, we would like our sales team to have no reason not to win the business with a retail partner. And, you know, maybe these are all tickets to the game today, but you need a high quality product. Everything is needed fast. Multiple locations allow us to direct orders to a manufacturing location close to the customer so that the freight cost and the delivery time ground is attractive and is fast. Sure. But all those things are critical. So yes, while Circle plays at aggressive price points, it's certainly not because of a low quality or poor quality product. We want to have the best products in the market, the fastest deliveries, and the most compelling price, which, as I say, gives our sales folks the tools that they need to go and win new business.
So Circle Graphics has been in the news the last, you know, few weeks, you know, month or so, with your acquisition of Bay Photo, which has been one of the biggest names in the professional photography space. And like, you know, other professional photography labs, you know, they've gone after the high end consumer and the enthusiast. You know, they're much more well known than they used to be, as even an enthusiast brand. So how did that come about? Because it's a big change for Circle Graphics in the sense that you have a consumer-facing brand right now.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Photo retailers, energize your sales with ShareMe Chat, the proven texting platform. Using chat to text on your website keeps your customers connected and buying. See us at Pro and IPI to find out why dealers using ShareMe Chat close more sales without adding staff. Find out more at shareme.chat.
It's interesting. Bay Photo is a brand primarily focused at the independent pro photographer.
Right.
So not so much a consumer brand. You know, Larry Abbott Ball founded Bay Photo, boy, almost 50 years ago. And
1972, I think, is what that means.
Exactly. And has done an extraordinary job expanding the business and developing, in my view, one of the best brands for the professional photography market.
Yeah, definitely.
And those are incredibly high-end products, whether they be framed prints, whether they be photos, acrylic, metal, wood, just a great range of high-end products that fits extremely well with Circle's lineup of products. And, you know, different products are suited for different parts of the market. So we tend to think of segmenting products and thinking about which channels that they would be appropriate for in terms of a good, better, best kind of concept. And I think the Bay Photo product lineup firmly falls in the best category.
So, but that's a lot of different product types to manage. I mean, it's a very, very diversified product portfolio compared to, Canvas. Now, I know there's a lot of variations within the Canvas space in the sense you've got some different substrates, some different sizes and things like that. But now you're talking metal, silver halide, inkjet, wood, you know, dye sub, all these other things. Is this something you're going to be able to move to some of those other plants around the country, those production cells?
I think the simple answer is yes for the higher volume products.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense to duplicate manufacturing capabilities for some of the more niche or fringe photo output products. But for the high volume items, absolutely. Part of the puzzle is being able to produce those in a geographic location that's close to the customer.
So what's been the response from some of your customers? Now, I mean, I'm assuming perhaps Bay was a customer of Circle Graphics, maybe that's how the conversation started. But you know, now you're in a sense you're competing with some of your customers. There's some channel conflict there. How have those conversations gone?
The conversations have gone well, and you're right. There's the potential for channel conflict there. Our retail partners, though, after announcing the Bay Photo acquisition, were by far much more excited about having an additional range of products available could go through their channels than they were about the competitive or potential competitive dynamic. Again, Bay Photo's customers are a little different than our retail partners. Customers of our retail partners are very much direct to consumer. Whereas Bay Photo is far more targeted at the professional market.
So you were recently one of the folks on a panel at the Visual First Conference on industry consolidation. And for those who weren't able to attend that, I'd like to kind of talk about, kind of the industry consolidation trend that's happening right now. Certainly, Circle Graphics is not the only company out there looking at acquisitions. There have been others. So what are some of the macro factors that are driving the industry consolidation right now?
I think there are a couple of things. I mean, we are a fragmented market still, and I think there is a something of a natural order to consolidation as a market grows and matures. Secondly, the market itself is growing. I think setting aside what we have seen in 2020 that I think is a bit of an artificial lift to demand based on people being stuck at home for a period of time and the decorating phenomenon has been well kind of documented and written about in terms of Home Depot selling more grills than ever and people at home and right. If they're going to be there, they're fixing things up, and that includes changing out pictures that are hanging on the walls. So I think we've seen something of a, remains to be seen how sustainable, but something of an artificial lift in the middle of this year. But setting that aside, our estimate is that the personalized wall decor market is growing in the 9 to 11% range.
Right.
And growth in an industry will also, I think, attract investors as growth is one of the key determinants as to whether your investment makes a good rate of return or not is how fast the business is growing. So that's more market conditions. And thirdly, I think for whatever reason, the private equity world has taken an interest in the personalization space, and of course personalized wall decor falls into that.
Yeah, because definitely we've seen that with the Shutterfly private equity activity with Apollo and Snapfish and things like that. And you have some private equity behind your company as well, as I understand.
That's right. I actually led an investor group that acquired Circle Graphics right at the end of 2012. So just as a wall decor business was kind of getting going, really the business that we invested in was the billboard company with not sure this is the right term, but with a lottery ticket that the Waldecore business would be successful. And a lot of my focus over the first 2-3 years was making sure that that new division reached a critical mass as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Say, if you roll the clock forward 8 years, that business is now 4 times the size, and the company is therefore 5 times the size as it was when it was Billboard alone.
So you're pretty good at picking winners, it looks like.
Well, it's interesting. There's an old saying, which is the harder we work, the luckier we seem to be.
There you go. There you go. So let's talk a little bit about the personalized product market. You've talked about, you know, the 9-10% growth. There's only so much space on people's walls. Is it really feasible for that market to continue, or do you see a time when people perhaps are changing out their wall decor seasonally or more often?
We do see that as a phenomenon. It's interesting. I love being out on the floor, looking at the printers and just observing the images that people are uploading and the images that people are turning into wall decor. And the vast majority are people. It's weddings, it's babies, it's kids, a lot of sporting events for those kids, it's family reunions, it's pets, it's travel. But those things, in my view, remain fairly topical. Obviously, a wedding photo may stay on the wall for decades, but the photo of little Johnny scoring a goal likely will get swapped out the following year as Johnny gets older and maybe his goals become more spectacular. But I do think for the personalized piece of people's walls, they are rotating faster than they used to. A little different for a piece of art, and as I say, a little different for a wedding photo. But I believe part of that phenomenon is due to price points. It's not so long ago, maybe 10 years or so, where you would be paying well over $100 for a 16x20 unframed canvas. Today, the product is out there getting pretty close to $20. And I think that's part of the puzzle. If something only costs $20 to hang on the wall, people are more relaxed about taking it down, probably not throwing it away, but putting it in the closet or in the basement and rotating that art. So we do think there's a lot of headroom still, and that is partly the reason, the price point.
What I think is interesting is even at the $20 price point, because the volumes have increased so much, there's still quite a bit of margin for the retailer. I mean, there's definitely a lot of potential there.
Yeah, exactly. A retailer is likely shooting for 100% markup, a 50% margin on their sale. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really interesting to me as I look at the end market of who is selling direct to consumers. They fall into two categories. There are the traditional photo departments of the, often drugstore type retailers, the places we used to go get our 4x6 prints from, have shifted their business, of course, into photo output products. People do still print 4x6 photos, but it's today dwarfed by other photos.
Everything else, basically.
Whether it's wall decor, coffee mugs, mouse pads, phone cases, etc. The trend for personalization is fairly strong, and I think not going away.
So let's talk about the near term and then the long term for a little bit. You mentioned before, you know, holiday 2020 is kind of an anomaly in the sense that some people have had more time. But also with the at-home shopping, being such a huge part of the retail landscape these days, you know, there's a lot of challenges there that are happening in terms of, you know, shipping delays, production concerns, and things like that. So what is kind of your near-term forecast that brands and retailers should keep in mind?
We think that holiday 2020 is going to be an absolute record and continues on the strong lift that 2020 has had. I think the swing to e-commerce from bricks and mortar retail at a macro level is permanent. The home decorating boom that has occurred this year, I think, will soften somewhat, mm-hmm. but people's sure. appetite for shopping online compared with going to a store has gone up dramatically, and I think has permanently accelerated several years worth of the underlying e-com trend.
Yeah.
You mentioned exactly. shipping for the holidays. I read an article, the title of which was Shipageddon, in one of the national newspapers recently. And no question, residential package volume in 2020 has caught the carriers short. I read one release from one of the major carriers who say they maintain a 10-year projection of residential package volume for planning purposes, CapEx, you know, trucks and system sure. capacity. And they say that in 4 months in the middle part of this year, they hit their 10-year projection of volume. In other words, residential package volume today is about where they expected it to be in 2030.
Wow.
That of course, puts a huge strain on the system. You know, we tend to think of delivery trucks and drivers as possibly the constraint. And certainly that's been tight. You can see UPS drivers and FedEx drivers in budget renter trucks and U-Hauls these days, wearing their uniforms, but not in branded trucks. The real constraint, I think, that is in the system are the sorting centers. Several years ago, FedEx and UPS each went to fully automated sorting centers. And that means it's not possible to just throw warm bodies and open up warehouse space to increase the sorting capacity. Those right. automated facilities have a finite capacity in terms of the number of packages. So the carriers are raising the flag that around shipping delays, as you suggest, and it will be interesting to see, but we fully expect being able to have a carrier pick up the package is going to be a constraint this holiday season, not actually making the product. So for anyone listening that is thinking about holiday gifts, get those orders in early would be my advice. We have actually added 20,000 square feet of additional space in each of our two main locations to store palletized packages ready to go, but wow. that can't be picked up immediately by the carriers. We're not going to slow down production. We will keep making the orders as they come in, but we do think that is going to be a constraint, getting the packages picked up and delivered on time.
And we're already seeing some of that messaging right now, you know, in the consumer channels with, you know, spots on the morning shows and similar news items that, hey, order early, Black Friday starts now, because I think everyone is kind of anticipating this bottleneck occurring. So assuming that COVID runs its course sometime in 2021, what are your expectations for next year?
With the spike in the middle of the year, we would certainly be excited to be seeing some continued growth next year. However, I would say April, May, June, July are really high bars in terms of comps for next year. But again, time will tell as to whether the underlying lift in e-commerce volume sustains. And my prediction is, I think that the home decorating spike that we saw will probably moderate, but we would hope to continue to move the needle on growth in 2021, albeit off a very, very strong year.
So as we come to a conclusion, what is some of the opportunities you see for the company overall in the next 18 months or so?
A continued growth. We do like to grow. And we do that organically, continuing to sell an increasingly broad product line to our retail customers. And we will continue to look carefully at whether there are potential acquisitions that that bring value to the mix. We're not a roll-up in the sense of the way roll-ups were became fashionable in the 80s, companies just buying companies for their own sake, and you know, buying revenue, buying cash flow, and hoping that a larger business is more valuable over the long haul than a smaller business. Which I guess is a strategy, but perhaps not a very sophisticated one. I think when we look at acquisitions, of course, we would like them to be accretive investments. But we're really looking to expand our product line, expand our process capabilities, expand our geographic footprint. And I think those opportunities still exist as we think about our market, not just as personalized wall decor, but broadening into personalized home decor from a geographic point of view. We are still very US-centric, some volume in Canada, some volume in Australia. Europe is an interesting market to us. And I think there are emerging retailers, typically not bricks and mortar, but e-com businesses selling auto-output product that want to have themselves an international footprint, and therefore they need partners that can do fulfillment elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that, you know, in the photographic industry, the industry was so focused, you know, previously on, you know, printing images on flat pieces of paper. And then it's been added on with, you know, what people used to call the trinkets, right? The mugs and the MOSFETs. But those are really, really taken seriously. And then over the last 5 years or so, the realization is not only will those products be acceptable or preferred by your current customer base, but whole new markets are being opened up for personalized photography, whether it's for a business use, whether it's for home use or some other use.
I agree. It was interesting to see Personalization Mall was sold earlier this year. And that business, whilst they do produce a smaller amount of wall decor photo output, is absolutely riding the macro trend of personalization, whether that's engraving of products, with monogramming of products, both for business and for consumers, just a, I think, unstoppable trend. And the players that have figured out kind of mass customization on a true industrial scale will do well.
Thank you, Andrew. And I hope that you have a wonderful holiday season, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
Thanks, Gary. My pleasure. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. Read more great stories and sign up for the newsletter at www.thedeadpixelssociety.com.